This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up, more details have emerged about the killing of 29 Coptic Christians in Egypt. They died for their profession of faith in Christ. Congressman Steve Russell of Oklahoma, retired Army Lieutenant Colonel, is here to discuss that and the growing threat of ISIS. Also, North Korean dictator Kim Jong-un is at it again, launching yet another missile and claiming a third milestone in their missile technology in less than 3 weeks. Can this situation be defused? Dr. Graham Allison laid out his thoughts in the New York Times earlier today. He joins us a little later here on Washington Watch. And the new study out of the University of Arizona reveals that the widely touted It Gets Better campaign, which is an LGBT promotion campaign spearheaded by the king of intolerance, Dan Savage, and promoted by Barack Obama, is a total failure. Tom Gilson, senior editor at The Stream, explains. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you miss anything on your way home, well, you can find it later. It's all archived at TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it's at T Perkins. All right, world leaders have condemned the massacre of Coptic Christians at the hands of ISIS. Last Friday, terrorists killed nearly 30 Christians, including children. Evidence now suggests, and witnesses testify to the fact that as the individuals were loaded off the bus, they were asked if they were Christians, if they refused to denounce their Christian faith, renounce their Christian faith, they were shot and killed, including children. Joining us now is Congressman Steve Russell of Oklahoma, a retired lieutenant colonel with the United States Army, has been very outspoken on military issues and issues of concerns as it pertains to ISIS. Congressman, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Well, thank you, Tony. It's great to be with you. It's sad what has happened, but we certainly need to lift up all of the families that have been involved and also for the Egyptian leadership as they grapple this issue yet again.
Right. You mean, again, they've been in a state of emergency after the Palm Sunday attacks against Coptic Christians. The government there, President El-Sisi, trying to get a handle on this situation. Are they making progress, in your opinion?
I think they are. And we have to put it in context. If Morsi had been president of Egypt at this time, this wouldn't have been another episode. This would have been a continuation and a string, much like what we saw when he was there. The fact that El-Sisi acted rapidly, he made immediate changes and transfers in the security team. Again, this was a monastery, so it was in an isolated place. Obviously, the enemy gets a vote, and they looked for vulnerable areas. They found one. But the fact that Egypt is attacking ISIS in Libya, that they are attacking these types of affiliates in Yemen, their commitment and resolve against terrorism is pretty profound. And so we cannot see Egypt as condoning this or their leadership as condoning this. We also have to remember that nearly 10% of the population, by some estimates, are Coptics.
Now, there is, you know, historically, the Coptic Christians, while they are a sizable portion of the population, they are often treated as second-class citizens. But to your point, the current government has been, I think, very outspoken and are trying to provide protection for all of the citizens. But in particular, I do think they're serious about taking out ISIS. Could that be why ISIS is trying to drive a further wedge there by attacking these Coptic Christians there, trying to promote a showdown with the Egyptian government?
There's no question that they are. We have to remember that one of Egypt's biggest industries is tourism. You saw an awful lot of success with the development of the Sinai after the Israel peace accords were signed. You've seen a lot of Europeans vacation and all of that. So they've tried to drive a wedge there to go against that. With the Russian plane that was bombed and went down, and you've seen terrorist attacks against European vacationers. Now we see this continued episodes with the Coptics. They're certainly trying to portray that Egypt does not have a handle on governance. But we've also seen some skill with President El-Sisi. People may have their various opinions of him. We should be grateful that he is not pro-terrorist. He is anything but. And we also have to remember that Egypt has had a military person at the helm, from Nasser to Sadat to Mubarak to now the Egyptian military stepping back in, when you had people that were part of the Muslim Brotherhood trying to take the government over. Mm-hmm. It is just the nature of the governments that are in the region. They have to have a strong hand. So you have a choice. You can have a benevolent king who is quite competent, like King Abdullah in Jordan, or you can have a benevolent dictator, or you can have a terrorist. So take your pick. But they are absolute allies and partners in the war on terror, and many of the Egyptian military leaders have trained in the United States, and they've been a defender of the alliance in the Israeli-Egypt peace accords that were signed, and they've not broken that since the days when Jimmy Carter was able to bring that to fruition. So I think it's important for our listeners and others that they can't think that Egypt condones this. They do not. But the Christians, minorities there, it is horrific. It does need to stop. These things need to be strengthened. We certainly need to voice our opposition to these types of attacks, but also understand that there are willing partners in Egypt against this type of violence.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Glad you're with us on this Monday afternoon. Congressman Steve Russell of Oklahoma, my guest. Congressman, you have spent a good bit of time in the Middle East when you were in the United States Army. In fact, it was your unit to track down Saddam Hussein. You've written about that in your book. Let me ask you about this, because sometimes, well, we're prone to come at a situation, a problem, based upon our worldview and our understanding. The Middle East operates in a whole different way. And one of the things that they respond to is strength. They take advantage of weakness. And we are coming out of an administration that showed, in my view, nothing but weakness. Now we have a president in Donald Trump that is showing more strength. Do we have a chance at this time to not just contain ISIS, but as the president says he wants to do, to eliminate them?
I think we have great opportunity, and there was a key factor in that. In the president's recent trip to the Middle East, what is remarkable is the Gulf Coast state members, the numbers that showed up to meet at this conference and make declarations to that extent. And you also have to look at, okay, no country in that region are we going to point at and say, okay, you know, they're doing everything we think they should. But guess what? They're going to look at us in much the same way. We live in different regions of the world with different cultures, different languages, different religions to a large extent. But that doesn't mean that we have to be enemies. In fact, we've been allies with many of these nations for a long, long time. And when you look at the relationship that we've had, because of Egypt and Saudi Arabia's actions in Yemen, they've been able to turn the tide against Iranian influence with the Houthi rebels that were about ready to take that country completely over. Now we see two-thirds to three-quarters of it back into more responsible hands. This is because of the leadership that we've seen in that area. And I think it begs to the bigger question. If they don't deal with their own issues, which they've clearly demonstrated that they have a willingness to, in a collective effort, they're never going to realize the gains and things that they would like to see for their respective countries. And I think the president's trip reinforced that, and the fact that he was so received by so many nations was encouraging.
Now, Congressman, having served, retired from the United States Army, now serving on the Armed Services Committee in the House and watching the budget process, how important is it that the president has put forward in his budget increased funding to the military? How important is that for our nation from a national security standpoint to be able to really counter these threats and not just, again, contain them, but eliminate them?
Well, it's vital. In fact, you may have seen recent reports where the Marine Corps jet fighters and jet readiness, 74% cannot fly due to parts, due to other issues. We've seen the United States Air Force running into similar problems to a slightly smaller extent, but still drastic. We have pilot shortages. We have cuts. Chris Gibson, who was a congressman from New York, who was also a combat veteran and a brigade commander in the 82nd Airborne prior to coming to Congress, he has since left Congress. Wonderful man. We worked on the Posture Act together in the Armed Services Committee last year that stopped the bleed out and the cuts. Now it's time for repair. Now, the president said on the campaign trail, and also since he's been in office, that he wants to restore our military and he wants to make it as strong as possible and the best ever. Unfortunately, the proposed budget by the OMB, $603 billion, will absolutely not get any of that done. All that will do is steady state pay for the reductions that President Obama put in place. Any of the restorations will have to be paid for, and that cannot be done with $603 billion. Consequently, the Armed Services Committee and those combat veterans, we're looking at it in the Warriors Caucus and other places. Guess what? We are trying to educate our peers that it's not just a dollar figure. It's not that at all. It's, okay, which air power capabilities do you no longer want to have? Which military ground units in the Army and the Marine Corps do you no longer want to have? These are the types of discussions, because when you just throw out figures of billions, you know, the American public, they're like, oh, why are we putting all that money in defense? Well, one, we're putting 40% less than we were just 7 years ago. And then what we have, it's a matter of capacity.
And it's also, there's a lot of social engineering that was done during the last 8 years that too has to be undone, and there's a cost.
You have to ask, how did that affect readiness? I mean, what does that have to do with readiness and defense
right.
of our country?
Absolutely. Well, Congressman, we're up against a break. I want to thank you for joining us. It's always great to talk
always
with you, Steve.
Always great to be with you.
Appreciate it, and look forward to seeing you real soon. Congressman Steve Russell of Oklahoma, member of the House Armed Services Committee, and also, as I mentioned, a retired Lieutenant Colonel from the United States Army. All right, when we come back, we're going to continue talking about national security issues. Another missile launch from North Korea. This is very serious. As I've spoken to a number of national security experts, they believe we are at a point with North Korea, when you look at all the other things happening in the world, Russia, China, the Middle East, North Korea is probably the hottest spot right now that could, if handled the wrong way, could lead to a war, which could potentially draw in China. It could be a real mess. How do we defuse the situation? Dr. Graham Allison is here after the break. He had a piece today in the New York Times laying out a potential path forward. That's next here on Washington Watch. Don't go away. We're back with more right after this.
Your mission is to find Granny and get that sauce.
Affirmative.
1 million moms in association with American Family Studios introduces Ryan DeFrady's Secret Agent.
I'm Ryan DeFrady's. I work alone.
Ryan is arrogant and reckless until the day he's paired with a very unlikely partner.
No way! I can do this alone, without anyone's help, much less my mom's.
Look, Ryan.
She's my mom!
Ryan DeFrady's Secret Agent is the new action-adventure series featuring a young spy with a whole lot to learn.
Mama's coming, sweetie!
She's an agent! Get her, boys!
Each exciting, fun-filled episode teaches children important values, like honoring parents and respecting authority. And there's a brief wrap-up at the end that connects the story to a biblical illustration. Ryan DeFrady's Secret Agent. Perfect for children ages 6 and over. Order yours today at RyanSecretAgent.com.
This is a Decency Minute. I'm Bill Johnson. There's a moral earthquake shaking the foundations of our nation. We feel the tremors and see the destruction it causes individuals and families. This moral earthquake is also confirmed by a recent Gallup poll showing that Americans hold record liberal views on most moral issues. This poll, which has tracked views on moral issues for decades, reveals that the majority of Americans now believe that sex outside of marriage, homosexuality, and euthanasia are considered morally acceptable. This is in spite of the fact that about 70% of Americans identify with Christianity. So while a majority of Americans consider themselves Christians, they claim that what God's Word clearly declares as sinful is morally acceptable. Our nation needs to heed the warning from Isaiah, "Woe to those who call evil good. Do we even know the difference? If not, why not?" This is a Decency Minute. I'm Bill Johnson.
Steve Tiber of 8 Days of Hope.
Our great country continues to get slammed by natural disasters, hurricanes and tornadoes, flooding. I mean, it's everywhere from Texas, South Carolina, to Georgia, Mississippi, all throughout the country, our country has suffered. Here's where you and I get a chance to be a glimpse of Jesus. It is so cool to meet a homeowner who has gone to no fault of their own. Their world has been turned upside down, and you get a chance to bless them. You know, we tarp roofs and do chainsaw work, and we gut homes that flooded right after disaster with our rapid response team. And then we also look to rebuild homes with 8 Days of Hope, like we've done 12 different areas of the country. 1,800 homes, $25 million of damage. People all the time say, man, you're good. Well, we're not that good, but He is great. Be a part of something unique. 8 Days of Hope.
Learn more at 8daysofhope.com.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at T Perkins. All right, the Air Force is trying out a missile interceptor system for the first time today. The missile will shoot down a potential incoming warhead. The test is over the Pacific from California's Vandenberg Air Force Base. And it comes just days. Well, actually, Sunday. Losing track of time here. I think I said Monday earlier today. It's Tuesday. This was the third launch in less than 3 weeks in which the North Korean dictator, Kim Jong-un, is claiming that they've reached a milestone in their ability to use this missile technology. They are moving full speed ahead. And as I said before the break, as I have spoken to a number of national security experts, this is the one thing, the one place, and this is in the midst of Russia, the Middle East. I mean, there's so many hotspots around the world, but this is the one place that security experts say keep them up at night. Well, joining me now to discuss this, Dr. Graham Allison. Today, he had a piece in the New York Times, basically laying out that this is a critical moment, and to defuse it, America has to approach it just the right way. Dr. Allison, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you for having me.
Well, let me get your opinion on this. How serious is the situation with North Korea right now?
Extremely.
Is it because you have a combination of this 33-year-old dictator who's, in my view, not quite right, but he has these missiles, which he is trying to flex his muscle and basically show that he's somebody on the world stage? Are there other factors in here that make this
volatile? I think for most Americans, the situation is truly bizarre. How can a small, isolated, impoverished country be just about to acquire the ability to attack the U.S., to attack San Francisco or Los Angeles with nuclear weapons? It makes no sense. I mean, I tried to explain this to one of my relatives this past weekend. They said, forget about it. This is impossible. I mean, this guy can hardly feed his people. But the fact is that in the foreseeable future, not very long, on the current path, Kim Jong-un, this very erratic, strange character who runs North Korea, will have the capability to attack San Francisco or Los Angeles with a nuclear weapon. That's on the one hand. On the other hand, President Trump had said, from the first time he ever heard of this idea, which he also found unbelievable when Obama told him about it in the handover, he says, this is not going to happen. He said, he tweeted immediately, not going to happen. And he said over and over, he's not going to allow this to happen. So we're coming to a crossroad where he's going to have to choose between attacking North Korea, running the risk of basically initiating a second Korean War, that's one hand, or living with Kim Jong-un being able to attack San Francisco or Los Angeles with a nuclear weapon. And these are lousy choices.
Now, you, and let me put this in context for people. You say that in the not-too-distant future, they'll have the ability to reach the continental United States with one of these missiles, and you're saying that it's within the first term of Donald Trump. So we're talking months.
So what the American intelligence community has said repeatedly. So I'm just repeating what they say, but right. I believe it from the evidence I've looked at is that not in a day or two, but I've compared it to a Cuban Missile Crisis in slow motion. That was a 13-day. Tense, the most dangerous moment in recorded history. Maybe 13 months, but not forever. So certainly in the first term, if interrupted, Kim Jong-un will acquire this capability.
Now you just mentioned the Cuban Missile Crisis. You actually mentioned that in your piece in the New York Times today as one of the most dangerous points in modern history where we were at the threshold of a nuclear war. Are we at a very similar spot now?
Well, not quite, but almost. Because if you, again, as I say, it seems so strange that this little pipsqueak crisis could be this big of a problem. But when it comes to the point of choice, if Trump has to choose between attacking North Korea so that it cannot conduct more missile tests, so that it won't be able to attack the U.S., that's option one, or option two, living with North Korea being able to attack the continental U.S., what is he going to choose? God only knows. He said he's going to attack, and I believe it's quite possible that he's going to attack. If he does, what's going to happen? Well, we can certainly destroy the capability of North Korea to launch missiles, for sure. But North Korea, our intelligence community tells us, will most likely retaliate by an artillery barrage against Seoul that could kill as much as a million people in a few hours. Well, my God, okay, so a million people, that's unbelievable. And then what happens? Well, then the U.S. and South Korea will destroy all of the other assets North Korea has for attacking South Korea. Otherwise, they may kill another 10 million people. So we'll attack all of their air, all of their missiles, all of their rockets. Well, now you've just initiated the Second Korean War. And most Americans can't remember, but in the first Korean War, we were marching rapidly up the Korean Peninsula, just about to unify North Korea, when China entered the war and beat us back down to the 38th parallel, where the divide continues today. So this is the most likely path that I see in the near future for this book that I just did publish called Destined for War, Can America and China Escape Thucydides' Trap? Is the most likely path that I portray in that book for getting to a war that neither China nor the U.S. wants, and that after which both China and the U.S. would look and say, my God, how did we let such a little pipsqueak event have such huge, devastating consequences?
Wow. It is a very, very serious situation. Dr. Allison, thank you so much for joining us. Very insightful piece. I encourage people to go to the website, tonyperkins.com, and follow links over. Again, Dr. Allison, thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me, and I'd be happy to come back anytime. Thanks.
All right. Thanks so much. I encourage you to, it was a very interesting piece, and I think I have a link on it at tonyperkins.com. You can go see it. Another reason to be praying. Very, very volatile world. All right, when we come back, we move toward the domestic side of things. Remember Dan Savage, It Gets Better? Well, not so. talk about it when we get back. Don't go away.
Making the most of your money. Here's Dan Celia.
This is the end of the month. It means we're going to get end of the month numbers. We did get some already. It looks like consumer spending advanced about 0.4%. That's what was expected. Personal income also up 0.4%. That would make the savings rate unchanged. But we did get some good numbers, income and spending numbers. That's very good, obviously, for the economy and looks good as we move forward. We also will get a consumer confidence number out. Consumer confidence number is expected to be a little bit lower than it was last look for the month of April, but it's expected to be 118.6. That's still very high. Later in the week, we get pending home sales numbers. We also are getting the job numbers, the non-farm payroll numbers that are coming out Thursday from ADP, and then we get weekly jobless claims. We're going to get some market manufacturing numbers. That is expected to be up slightly, and so is the construction spending. Construction spending looks like it's up to about 0.5%, which is a 7.7% swing. Non-farm payrolls, that's the big number. That's coming out on Friday. It's expected to be 185,000 after last 211,000. So we'll see how it goes. Unemployment rate likely to be unchanged. And hopefully we see more people coming into the labor participation.
Want to hear more financial advice from Dan Celia? Then look for his podcast when you visit the website afr.net.
I'm Tony Perkins. This is Washington Watch. Glad to have you along on this Tuesday afternoon. I'm going to get my day straight here. All right. You might remember this. I'm trying to figure out how I can describe him in an appropriate way. Dan Savage, an LGBT vile activist. I mean, I wouldn't encourage you to do it, but you could Google it and just see what he says. It's horrific, the kind of things that he says. Anyway. He teamed up and created this anti-LGBT bullying initiative back in 2010 called It Gets Better. Now, look, let me be very clear up front. I don't think any student in school should be bullied for any reason, right? But this wasn't about bullying. This was about promoting homosexuality and transgenderism and all of this and bullying. And you can actually see videos where he bullies students who refuse to listen to his tirades against the Bible and Christianity. All right, so he's a bully. He is the queen of intolerance. And anyway, the University of Arizona, Professor Russell Toomey, did a study on this It Gets Better campaign to see if it actually does get better. Well, what they actually found out that it is a failure. Joining me now to discuss this is Tom Gilson. He is the editor-in-chief at The Stream. Tom, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here. My boss would probably be unhappy if I didn't mention I'm a senior editor, but not editor-in-chief at The Stream.
My mistake.
Thank you for the promotion.
My mistake, Tom, but you can take that to your boss, tell him I think you should be promoted.
Okay, I'll do that.
You wrote a piece on this. Tell our listeners about it.
Yeah, it's a response to this research, which actually it's a different twist than what you described. The research that Toomey and his colleagues did has been reported by gay media the way you said it, as it undermines the It Gets Better campaign, when in fact it doesn't really cover that at all. And that's been a common misconception of the way this research has come out. And what's interesting about this is the gay media are usually quick to attack any research that doesn't support their people and doesn't support their agenda. They didn't attack this research. They went with it. They supported it. And what it made me wonder is if they're about ready to throw Dan Savage himself under the bus. Because why else would they? It is their practice, and we've seen this with lots of other research. It's their practice to say that any research that disagrees with their agenda is wrong. They didn't do that this time. I think that maybe what they're saying is we're embarrassed by Dan Savage, too. That's what I wonder.
So you think that the LGBT community has had enough of the antics of Dan Savage, and so they're using this as a way to distance themselves from him?
I think it might be. That's one explanation that makes sense of what's going on here. And, you know, as I was reviewing, and I've encountered Dan Savage before, for example, in the instance you were talking about where he was bullying Christian students, and I've had numerous opportunities to see what he's doing. But what I found at this time is he had described himself in an NPR interview as a potty-mouthed political pundit. And, you know, what I've observed as I've studied gay strategists is that they want to make themselves look good. They want to make themselves look ordinary, normal, and proper and moral. And he's not helping them. He doesn't look that way. He's actually perhaps being more honest to the truth of what's going on, but he's not helping support that side of what they're trying to present themselves as.
So he does not fit the image that they're trying to create of themselves, and so he has been so out front and has in many ways become a spokesman for the LGBT movement that they're hoping that he's gone. Is that your takeaway?
I think so. And you know, when he launched It Gets Better, it got supported by everybody. Hollywood, President Obama submitted a video, and Michelle Obama and Joe Biden, they all got on board with it saying this is a great thing. And, the takeaway is that Dan Savage isn't such a good person to be hanging around with, even though we've got political figures and celebrities like that who want to hang around with him. Now, you can draw your own conclusions as to how surprising it is that some of those people would be hanging around with him.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll leave that to you.
At 30 seconds, we're up against a break, but the study also does point out the fact that the program is not effective in its stated purpose.
It does cause, it does raise questions as to how effective it might be. And I think that's what the researchers wanted to say, is that we don't know if it's effective, and we really shouldn't be jumping all over it as if we knew that it was, yes.
All right. Tom, thanks so much for joining us. As always, great to talk with you. Thanks so much.
Thank you very much.
Tom Gilson with The Stream, senior editor at The Stream. To find out more, go to the website, tonyperkins.com. Well, that would be surprising. I mean, I guess he is so far out there. I mean, again, all you got to do is look at some of the stuff he has said, and I guess it doesn't surprise me they'd want to distance themselves from him. However, I mean, he's not the only one that's out there. All right, we're coming back from a break. We're going to be going to the phone lines. 866-372-7234. So don't go away. We're coming back with more Washington Watch right after this.
Mark your calendars for the 2017 Values Voter Summit on October 13th through 15th in Washington, D.C. With a new administration in place, America is primed for change. Seize the moment to inform and mobilize Americans to protect religious liberty, champion traditional values, strengthen national security, and limit the size of government. Invited speakers include President Donald Trump, Vice President Mike Pence, Secretary Ben Carson, Ambassador Nikki Haley, Senator Ted Cruz, Kellyanne Conway, Dana Lash, Franklin Graham, Dr. Alveda King, Benjamin Watson, and many more. Plus, don't miss the opportunity to network and meet with organizations and other values voters to discuss the most pressing issues of our day, including religious liberty, the sanctity of life, natural marriage, national security, and more. On October 13th through 15th, join us for the premier conservative event in the country. Register now at the early bird rate of $99 until May 31st. Visit valuesvotersummit.org for more information. That's valuesvotersummit.org.
Is God calling you to pursue theological graduate education? What's keeping you from taking the first step? Is it time? What if you could choose from flexible class options? Is it money? What if competitively priced seminary offered academic scholarships? Do you think you're alone? What if your classmates were just like you, balancing careers and families with seminary? Hello, I'm Dr. John Nyhoff, president of Wesley Biblical Seminary in Jackson, Mississippi. Take the first step. Visit wbs.edu.
I think that we are called not to worry about our finances as long as we are honoring and pleasing God with those same finances.
Stewardship matters, even in these uncertain times.
God is faithful to help us weather the storms.
Visit afastore.net to find the DVD Financial Preparation for Uncertain Times with Dan Celia and all the resources of the AFA Cultural Institute.
Sister, you are loved. Hi, Kim Katola for Cradle My Heart today. My sister Cynthia gave me a necklace shaped like an envelope. Inside, a tiny engraved postcard read, "Sister, you are loved." I wear that charming little reminder to help me on days when I know I may be facing some difficulty alone. After abortion, I felt so alone. God's love just did not seem real to me. Have you given up on being loved and being forgiven? Isaiah 61 pictures the Lord draping a garment of His praise over us instead of the spirit of despair which may cover us after abortion. God doesn't give up on us, so let's not give up on Him. Begin to put on this truth and wear it like your favorites. You are loved, you are forgiven, you are His. Find a network of Christ-centered organizations offering hope after abortion at cradlemyheart.org. Saving lives and healing hearts after abortion, one story at a time. CradleMyHeart.org.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. All right, yesterday was Memorial Day. And this was Memorial Day weekend. You know, it is, was, it's what people, you know, say the start of summer, and it is. But it's also a time in which we stop to reflect upon the great sacrifices that many in this country have made. And I want to hear from you how you and your family may have honored those fallen American heroes in your community over the weekend. Give me a call, 866-372-7234, 866-372-7234. We obviously, it's obviously, but we did on Sunday at our church, we stopped and actually we played the taps commemorating, paying tribute, and remembering the men and women who had laid down their lives for our country. Before I left Washington on Friday, I actually went to the Korean Memorial. And, you know, etched in stone there, it has "Freedom is not free." And I think we need to remind our children that that is the case. I remember reading as a child, I don't remember who it was that the quote originally came from, but the freedoms won by the fathers must be maintained by the sons. And part of that is not necessarily just, you know, having to be in the military, although that's certainly part of it, but just understanding that the freedoms we have require that we understand the value attached to them and that we are vigilant in defending those freedoms, in protecting those freedoms. So, what might you have done this weekend to commemorate Memorial Day? 866-372-7234. 866-372-7234. Let's go to Texas, where Carolyn is on the line. Carolyn, welcome to Washington Watch.
How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you today?
Oh, I'm great. That extra day off was nice. I commemorate Memorial Day. I've got a scrapbook, and it's photographs that I took when I was in Europe. And we visited the American Cemetery in Normandy, and I stood on the beach at low tide when the water allowed me to stand there and look at the sculpture Le Brave. And I always get choked up when I think about this, but I remember looking down at the sand and thinking that it should have been red. And later we went on to the American Cemetery, and the thing that just absolutely tore at my heart were the tombstones that said, "Here rest in honored glory, the comrade in arms known but to God." And I was also surprised to see Stars of David scattered among those crosses, knowing that Hitler was marching across Europe trying to absolutely annihilate the Jews. And I have this whole scrapbook of this, and I sat yesterday, and I just looked back through all of those photographs, and it's a reminder that your freedom isn't free, and it has been bought and paid for by the blood of those who have fought for this nation at home against England, against other, you know, to bring freedom to other people in other parts of the world.
It comes at a very high price, and there have been those that have been willing to pay that price. And in part, I think what makes America unique, Western civilization, I should say, is that it comes from what, well, it comes from that Judeo-Christian orientation, worldview, if you will, where Jesus himself and John said that, you know, greater love hath no man than to lay down his life for his friends. It's not about money, not about, you know, promotion. I mean, it's literally about this is what's unique about America. And I believe that's why America is the sole superpower in the world. And the further we move away from that Christian worldview, that understanding of the fact that, you know, that is love. Greater love hath no man than to lay down his life for his friends. And that's what men and women have been willing to do in this country, and what men have done for generations in order that we might enjoy the freedoms that we have. The least we can do is to, number one, recognize the sacrifices that have been made. And you know, we're coming off of, you know, a decade or more of conflict, more than a decade, of continual conflict, Afghanistan, Iraq, continue to have men and women in harm's way. And we need to be praying for them. We regularly pray for our men and women in the military as a family. We need to be praying for those families that have made those sacrifices, that no longer have someone sitting at the table on those holidays because they're gone. And then we have to remember these freedoms. And this is one of the reasons I stay on this about our religious freedom. That religious freedom is our first freedom, and it came at a high price. We've got to be willing to use it in order to preserve it. If men and women are willing to die to protect our freedoms, the least we can do is use those freedoms and demand that those in office recognize those freedoms, again, that came at a high price. We can never surrender these freedoms. We must not surrender these freedoms, I should say. We can. Unfortunately, I believe we have. And I believe too many were willing to do that under the last administration. We can't. We cannot allow that to happen. But I think it's very important that we remind our children that we, you know, because this isn't happening in the schools, folks, all right? Our schools are not teaching our children. First off, begins with American exceptionalism. What makes America exceptional? Why would people want to die for this country? I'm grateful that we're still raising up men and women who are willing to serve in our nation's military and lay down their lives. Disproportionately, we see those in the military are conservative and they're religious in their orientation. They get it. They understand. That's what it, again, goes back to that Christian worldview. But I often, when I have some of my kids with me in Washington, that's one of the things we do. We go out, we go to the various memorials. And we, you know, I want to expose them to those things so they see and they understand the price associated with their freedom. So 866-372-7234. Maybe you have something that you like to do. Maybe it's a tradition that you do on Memorial Day, or maybe it doesn't have to be a Memorial Day. The main thing is that we're passing along these values and this understanding to the next generation. Because again, it's not happening in our school system. In the culture, really in many ways, we have seen this cultural transformation that, well, it's turning everything upside down. What's good is bad, and what's bad is good. And we're seeing those very virtues, those things that make for a great free society, are attacked. And it's been interesting. When I went into the Marine Corps right out of high school, that was been a long time ago now. That was in 1981. That was Vietnam had actually only been over officially for about 6 years, and the military was held in disdain by the popular culture, and so that was not a good move. Liberals didn't care for the military at all, and so it's been interesting after 9/11 how this actually probably before that, even the first Gulf War, there was kind of a transformation that took place where even the liberal elements of society was forced into having to praise the military. And so now the highest of all, pretty much all national or entities, institutions, the military is held in highest regard. But yet the messages that are often sent systematically undermine the warrior ethos, the idea of masculinity, and that there are certain things worth fighting for and dying for. That's a key part, and that has to be passed on from generation to generation. You know, as Ronald Reagan said, you know, freedom is not transferred through the blood. You've got to. Our freedoms are just one generation away. We've got to teach the next generation. We've got to equip them and inspire them to pursue and maintain and defend these freedoms. And it doesn't just happen. The number to call if you'd like to get in on the conversation this afternoon. Let me encourage you, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com, and I think we still have some links up there. We ended up our pastor's conference on Friday, and we've actually played a few clips from that on Friday, some of our speakers. But there's more. It was a great conference. Briefing for the pastors, and if you missed it and you'd like to find out more about it, go to TonyPerkins.com and you can follow the links over. And I would encourage your pastors to be a part of the Watchman Network. As I was talking to different pastors, just so refreshing, encouraging to know that they're not standing alone. They can come and they realize that they're a part of a growing network of pastors, over 13,000 now pastors in the Watchman Network. And anyway, you can find out more about it by going to the website, TonyPerkins.com, and following the links over. Again, we've got some of the clips still up there from this past week with the 14th annual Watchmen on the Wall Pastors Conference. All right, go back to our topic, talking about Memorial Day weekend and what different folks did as they commemorated the weekend, reminding the next generation that freedom is not free. There's a high price that comes with that freedom. And, you know, I found a lot of churches even are kind of getting away from recognizing these holidays. You know, I think it's important that we keep, you know, there's a separation between the kingdom of God and, you know, this kingdom, this world in which we live. But I believe a good Christian is a good citizen. And we have a responsibility and obligation to be a part of both. And I think these holidays, when we look at the freedoms that we have and how we got them and how we maintain them, I think it's important that we stop, we pause, and recognize those who have sacrificed. All right, let's go to Molly in Starkville, Mississippi. Molly, welcome to Washington Watch.
Well, so I just appreciate the dialogue, I guess, that's going on right now about, like, I think the nexus between patriotism and Christianity. But perhaps one of the things that I wanted to challenge, I'm an evangelical Christian, and something that I hear from radio programs, from my pastor, is often, I think you just referred to it as American exceptionalism.
Mm-hmm.
And I just find a tension, and it frustrates me that oftentimes we can get the notion that somehow America is the new Israel and that we are God's chosen people. Certainly we were, you know, a country that was founded on Christian values. I think as we've all seen, you know, as our society changes, maybe that composition's changed somewhat. But I still, when I hear American exceptionalism spoken about, I think it really still infers this sense of superiority and entitlement, and kind of justifies anything that we do as thinking it's okay or God ordained. Could you just elaborate on your thoughts around that topic?
I can, Molly. Thanks so much for listening and calling in. I've just got a couple of minutes left. I'll try to do that. I may need to come back to that tomorrow. But there's actually a stream within the evangelical world right now, replacement theology, which sees the church as replacing the people of Israel, children of Israel. There have been some thoughts about America being the new Israel. I'm out of time. I'm not going to be able to talk about it today. But Molly, I will return to this tomorrow because it's a great question, because I do think it keeps some from paying the tribute that we should to this country. All right, folks, out of time. Sorry I got that question at the very end. Stay tuned. We'll be back tomorrow, Lord willing. I hope you will as well. Until then, do what the Apostle Paul says in Ephesians 6. Just keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.